We're at historic tax low right now, but it's going to be less than for some reason. So that's interesting. So you're not going to create a whole bunch of money for your clients. You're just going to have them retire poor, so lower tax rate. That makes no sense to me, but whatever. So, but that whole thinking and that thought process, such a scarcity mindset. So I like how my son responded. He didn't want a little present. He wants a big present.
You're listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.
Hi, this is Ken Green, the host of the Engineer of Finance podcast. And I have my always excited and happy to be here, Tammy B.
Hey, Ken.
My awesome co-host.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm super excited to be on this episode.
Me too.
This episode, to keep me on track, is supposed to be about sequence of returns. In our last episode, I said we'd be talking about it, and we're going to have a whole retirement type theme for most of this year. And I'll probably talk about it as well. It's like, hey, if you're focusing on creating more wealth, that's great. I mean, find what you love to do and get paid to do it. Create a huge value for others, and you're going to get paid as well. But if you're just focused on that component and you're not focused on other areas of your life, like health, what good is all the money in the world if you're ill as can be and not healthy?
Absolutely.
So I'm making a big focus for myself to focus not only on creating a lot more wealth for others and my family, but also I got to focus on the health part. That is a huge opportunity cost. What can we do on the distribution phase of retirement to keep as much of that cash flow net? And Tammy, I don't know if we've talked about some of this terminology, but do you remember, when I talk about cash flow, what does that mean to you?
Money that is available to me now.
All right, perfect. And what's the difference between gross and net?
Oh, I never remember that one.
Well, gross is usually gross, right? People aren't too happy with how small their paychecks are. It's pretty gross. It's disgusting. and then you take away all the taxes that the government wants. That's your net, which can be really painful.
Right. That's the one that should be called gross.
it's just pure robbery in so many ways. And I'm not saying I'm anti-government. I understand its intention. It's just, does it really need to keep growing way out of control, guys? Again, another article came out last week. Record taxes collected and record deficit. Mm. This beast cannot live within its mean. These politicians need, on all sides of the aisle, need to stop buying votes. This welfare on the corporate side and on the other, on both spectrums, it's got to stop. And it's got to stop. It's outrageous. But anyway, the taxation is in all these people, Social Security coming in, where they were promised to never be taxed on that income. Well, that promise was broken, and now that income is susceptible to taxation. So what we can do to create that net cash flow, so that how do we improve the net number? If the gross doesn't look good enough, these financial advisors, I think a lot have good intentions, but what they're teaching, majority of them, is just fundamentally upside down. And so I'll kind of equate it to, have you ever seen the pyramid, the health pyramid that the government endorsed of how you're supposed to eat?
Yes.
All right. Well, do you know what that thing's called? Maybe you can Google it real quick while we're doing this episode.
Sure. I don't know, but isn't it just the food pyramid?
I don't know. I've always thought it was, well, let's put it this way. In high school, I was told I don't do well. I knew a long, long time ago, you know, why I was a horrible track athlete. I love soccer. I love tennis. But I was never into long distance running. And then I was like this tiny thing in high school. I didn't start growing. I mean, I was 17 when I started college, and I didn't really start growing until I was like 19, 20. So it was really hard to be an athlete when I'm playing with adults, it seems like. You know, I'm like this tiny 100-pound kid, you know, chubby 100-pound kid in high school in my freshman, sophomore year. And then like all my friends are like 6'1", 6'2", monsters, right? So, but anyway, I was told in track that, to eat all this pasta, eat all these carbs. Well, it made me so sick. I mean, I'm doing a 1 mile run or 2 mile run. I mean, and I'm running right afterwards to the bathroom because I was dying. Isn't that crazy? And it's all based off this stupid food pyramid, the carb load. Well, later on, when I started really starting taking in self-studying about nutrition, and learning more and doing a different contrarian way to address it. I was like, oh, so way before this whole gluten, you know, anti-gluten thing became popular, I mean, 15, 20 years ago, and I was like, hey, I don't think for my body how it's reacting and all the stuff I'm reading, like, you know, Dr. Atkins, you know, maybe he went too extreme in certain things, but it opened my eyes to a different way of thinking about nutrition. Oh, and shocker, I started feeling way better, got way healthier, put on a lot more muscle, became a way better athlete in many ways. For me, at my level athlete, not talking about, you know, professional athletes or super good college athletes, but just for me, a better athlete, I turned that food pyramid upside down. You know, so yeah, you're right. It's called the food pyramid, I think. Well, whatever the freaking government endures. So talk about, so again, this is kind of how I make fun of the government and the financial industry, how they're a marriage in hell, like 401ks and IRAs. You know, they kind of get together and, oh, they've changed this thing around. I'm looking at now that they're like becoming history revisions. That's the one I just Googled. This is not what I used to look at, where it's talking about vegetable salad and fruit. It used to be like cereal and pasta and bread was at the bottom or something. And you should have as little fat and meat as possible. Something like that, something that type of extreme. So I was like, I turned that thing upside down and I started feeling so much better in so many ways. Isn't that amazing? And
it just proves that everyone needs something different.
You gotta take things that are unique for you and approach it the way that works right for you. Not one size fits all. But I also kind of equate it to the financial industry. Everyone's dumping their money into mutual funds and ETFs and these indexes, very passive on the investment side. Less than 5% of the population was of money was in mutual funds in 1980. Mm. And now like over 50%.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's the returns, just anyway, it's the returns that are made in the market are not enough for anyone to have a strong retirement. It is impossible. Conclusion. The other thing too is so when less than 1% have enough for retirement, less than 1% have a million or more for retirement. Mm. And we're being told take only 3 to 4% by the financial industry for safe withdrawal rate. Mm. So Tammy, at $1 million, and I'll just the math for you, the 3%, let's call it a high percent, 4% of $1 million, which isn't that easy for a lot to achieve, that's only $40,000 a year in income.
Mm, not a lot.
No. And then you got the Social Security and that can have some form of taxation on it. I mean, it's not that much. So if that's a million, that's 1% of our nation. So yet majority of us that want more money, we're going to go see an advisor. So that my point is that what the majority of advisors are teaching in our government, as far as 401ks, IRAs, these tax incentives to put into these qualified plans that have a lot of rules on the accumulation side. And I really like this parallel. I don't think I've ever explained this on the retirement side. Are you into like climbing mountains or hiking, Tammy?
Yes.
So
I live in Oregon.
Yeah, I know you live in Oregon. So you'd be amazing how people live in the Reno Tahoe area and don't ski, right?
That's
the reason why I'm here. I love the mountains. So my wife's way into hiking. For me, if I just go out in the boat or go skiing, that's or tennis, that's not what I naturally want to do. But my wife says, hey, let's go hiking. We go do it. I love it every time. And for one of her birthdays, I went and hiked Whitney with her, which is the highest mountain in North America, in the 48 states. That was incredible.
I bet.
And I've watched, I never read the book, but I used to watch the Discovery had a great series on climbing Mount Everest and a lot of the rules with it. But what you being a hiker, what is the most dangerous part? Is it hiking up to the top of Everest or the top of the mountain? Is that the hardest part?
I've heard it said that it's hardest going down.
It's the way down where people die. That's the hardest part. Everest, it's not getting up. It's the way back down. That is by far more challenging. So my point is on the retirement side, you accumulate. But the hard part is now how are you going to get back down on that distribution side?
Right.
And I'm not a huge fan of using the word retirement, but it's some form for all of us. I mean, it's just, I hate looking at a lot of the reality of it. But as you get, I watched, you know, my parents, I watch myself, I watch people around. We get older, my parents don't move as fast as they used to.
Right.
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 You know, this year when I injured my hip somehow in February, actually I wasn't moving near as fast as I used to. I mean, I had 80-year-olds and walkers blowing by me in the airport, you know, several months ago because I did something to my hip so bad. I mean, I was going to get a wheelchair, but I was like, this is crazy. But the distribution side is a big deal. And you know, I mean, you're a ways away from retirement, Tammy.
It's okay. You can use my age.
Like, so I did, that's all right. Let's say you're doesn't matter. You're like 15, just 20 years away from
retirement. I'm 50 years old. I just turned 50.
Oh, happy birthday. When was your birthday?
September 10th.
No, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy 50th birthday.
Thank you.
Oh, whatever. I don't know why 65 is the magic number, 67 or 70. It doesn't matter. So at some point in time, things just slow down for us physically. And so you always want to, get to the point where that you can have enough money where that you're not so reliant on your physical and mental abilities to get stuff done. It's just the way things are. I feel myself, you know, it's just the way it is.
You're not.
No, it's just reality. And so the more you can accumulate, the more money that I'm always about loving what you do and maximizing the use of your money today and creating a way wealthier tomorrow. And this idea of tying up your money in these government-sponsored plans forever, I'm not saying that a piece of it doesn't make sense. It's just on the pyramid. I like to turn that pyramid upside down. If 99% of the industry has created a 1% success rate, then why don't we just flip that thing upside down? It's probably a good place to start for most people.
Right.
So maybe we shouldn't have such a huge concentration in ETFs and mutual funds and be passive. Maybe we shouldn't put stuff in so it's tied to a lot of rules and you can't touch and use that money throughout your lifetime. It is impossible to have enough money for retirement if you put all your money in the qualified plan game and think it's going to compound and compound and compound and you're going to win. It's not possible. Anyone has a question on that, reach out to me. I can prove it all day long with math and science. All day long. You can't win. You have to take a different approach. You have to have assets moved and synergy in all these different ways. And this ties the retirement piece and sequence returns and turning things upside down. Does that make sense? If I mean, doesn't it just, I don't think, if I went to my 3.5-year-old son, he's getting pretty close. Man, is he, he says, I want a big present. So he smiled. I don't want a little present. I want a big present.
Oh my gosh.
See, he's got it right. You know, so you got the financial industry that's saying, hey, you're going to give us all your money to control forever. And then at 60, we're going to scare the hell out of you, give it back to you on the distribution phase, right? In doses or 65. And we're going to show you Monte Carlo simulations that say you shouldn't take more than 3% out. Because if you do, you're going to outlive your money. And so it's like, and we're going to put you in a lower tax bracket because some reason they have a crystal ball and they know what taxes are going to be then.
Right.
We're historic tax low right now, but it's going to be less than for some reason. So that's interesting. So you're not going to create a whole bunch of money for your clients. You're just going to have them retire poor, so lower tax rate. That makes no sense to me, but whatever.
Right.
So, right. But that whole thinking and that thought process, such a scarcity mindset. So I like how my son responded. Yeah, he didn't want a little present. He wants a big present.
I love that.
And so why don't we just turn the whole food pyramid thing and how I got on this, it's just interesting now how my brain's working, but it's like the financial pyramid, right? The food pyramid and the financial pyramid, this like government sponsored, hey, this is how you should do everything. But it's kind of interesting where the government got the idea in the first place, maybe some big commercial influences, maybe. And so why don't we just turn the financial pyramid upside down? The typical financial pyramid that's being promoted is wrong, in my opinion, for most people. To your point, Tammy, you know, we all respond. You probably do great on a whole bunch of rice and carbs. My body's way too efficient. I love it. Boy, do I love pasta and lasagna. I love it, but my belts don't. You know, something's happening with the attire. It keeps shrinking. So, but anyway, let's turn the financial pyramid upside down. Let's play it differently. And so I'll tie in here. Yay. Yeah. Now I'm about to bore you with the math stuff and the financial stuff. You ready? Ready for boredom?
I'm so ready.
It's like, hey, Tammy, what did we talk about last week? I don't know. I always enjoy you, Ken, but it was boring. I don't remember what we talked about. So hopefully I made it really entertaining for you, Tammy.
To be clear, I have to clear my name with everyone listening. I did not say that it was boring. I said I couldn't remember, and you took it to me being bored.
That's unsensitive. So here's an idea. And so when I talk about the reverse mortgages, it's not that I like dealing with, I've been so brainwashed forever, right? On so many things. And so it's hard to think outside the box sometimes. I should take that back. Naturally, I've been a contrarian thinker. I have a skeptical mindset and certain stuff. So actually for me, I like thinking contrarian. It's like, okay, why is it coming at this direction? The masses thinking this way? Why is the financial industry and the financial media and the financial entertainers that all have an incredible amount of wealth, but I see who they represent and the majority don't have much of it? So what are they teaching? What are they doing? Because I want to do the exact opposite of what they're teaching. And so that's the thing I teach my clients. Let's just do what the industry is really doing. And what I like bringing about with on the reverse mortgage side and having Don Graves come on is that I want to undo that bias, just what's in a word. Because when you see what it can do, and for people on the distribution phase of money, and you're building it up. But now, I mean, Tammy, if you became solely reliant on the money you've built up and you had it all in the stock market, how much are you going to pull out every year and every month, knowing that you have a finite amount of it and you have no idea? Do you know when you're going to die?
No.
Yeah, I don't know when you're going to die either. I don't think anyone knows when I'm going to die.
Right.
So that's a huge unknown.
Yep.
So how do you determine, without having a crystal ball, how much you get to pull out if you decide to retire at 65?
Yeah. How scary that would be every month.
Yeah. And so what happens is people get in retirement, they pull the trigger, and now every day is a Saturday. I'm so grateful. I mean, I don't know if Todd Langford got that from, if he created that or got it from another person he's friends with or a mentor, but that is such a good, happy retirement. I see a lot of people, I go to McDonald's and a very nice older lady is serving me a meal. I highly doubt that was her retirement plan.
Right.
So it's a huge unknown. It's like how much you know to pull. And so all of a sudden, this scarcity mindset kicks in. You get concerns like, oh my gosh. So what do most people do? They protect that principle. They let it sit in the market in the financial industry, which, by the way, a lot of it's at risk. And I don't care if they balance half of it into bonds and half in equities, whatever. I argue against that strategy too for most people. But that's a lot of money at risk. And so then they try to survive on the interest alone. And that can be dangerous. And then what if there's a huge hit in the market? If you have $1 million sitting in your retirement account and you're pulling out 40 grand a year and you got your Social Security coming in, whatever, if you buy into that strategy and all of a sudden that $1 million, we get hit. I mean, my gosh, stock market's been on a scream since 2009. It likes to correct every 7 to 8 years. We've been on a 10-year run. Hint to everyone to start really thinking about. I mean, it could go on another 10 years. It'd be unprecedented. But if you look back at history, I mean, we have no idea what's going to be in the future. But that would be interesting if it keeps going up and up and up and doesn't go down. But what if your $1 million became, I watched this happen in 2009, March 2009, when I got my securities license and I'm learning the industry and a lot of people thought they're retiring, coming to my door, lost 60-70% of their wealth and they can't retire anymore. Or the ones that already did retire, you think they're going to hire them back at 65 after they just retired? Ones that pulled the trigger, Tammy?
No.
No. I mean, they're done. That's scary. So what do you do? If your $1 million just went down to 50 grand or half a million a year later, are you going to pull out 50 grand? I mean, 40 grand again?
I'd go get a job at McDonald's.
You got 4% on half a million. Now you're taking, so you're going to take that withdrawal rate off that interest. My gosh, that is now 20 grand. It got cut in half. If you're barely surviving on 40 grand, you think you're going to be able to, could you survive where you live in Oregon on 40 grand a year?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you. Awesome.
But I get your point.
So there you go. Well, you'd be fine though. So you can retire now. So my point is, though, if it drops, could you survive on 20? Okay. So now it's dropped to 20. Now what do you do? Do you pull out another 20 and now take your half million down to, now my brain just stopped for a second. you know, you have, what I just say, yeah, you take your 40. So now your half million goes down to 440.
Yeah.
And what if it goes down again, which has happened 1 year, 2 year, 3 years in a row.
Right.
And you start ripping down that principle. What's it have to do now in the market to get even close back to a million? If you start withdrawing that money, that hurts. But what if you have money sitting in some type of something outside the market? What if you got it sitting in a mattress, literally just sitting in a mattress? You've got 400 grand or 100 grand or 200 grand sitting somewhere else, not correlated to the marketplace.
You probably feel safer.
And then the best thing you can do, and I always make fun of this because every time the market crashes, watch all the great ads come out. You know, they're brilliant at it. The market was taking its hits in October and December of last year. I mean, really getting pummeled. And here comes the nonstop ads from big broker dealers and saying, hey, this really good ad saying this is the worst time to pull out your money. You just got slaughtered. The worst thing you could do is take out your money now. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you know they recorded those things a long time ago, new to release when this occurred. And I always make fun of it. It's like, okay, well, if it's going to keep going down, it should stay in. That's crazy. But the reality is there's a lot of truth to it. You typically have a reversion to the mean where if you see a huge correction, a huge loss in the market, especially after year, at some point in time, there's going to be a reversion to the mean and probably is the best time when everyone is selling to buy and get back in, right? And so when it ties to sequence returns, when I'm talking about pulling out money, how powerful would that be that if you have where you lost half your portfolio in the market, wouldn't it make sense just to go to your savings account? I mean, your mattress?
Yeah.
Or just a regular savings account or your safe and then use that 40 grand. So you got, I don't know a number I said a few minutes ago, but you took 40 grand from that 200 and just hopefully, fingers crossed, the market recovers next year. Because you know if you pull more, and I can show this, I show this clients all the time on spreadsheets in person or in online meetings, is that when you take that kind of huge hit in the market, worst time you could pull money is when the market's gone down a lot. It'll really crush your chances of survival. So that's kind of sequence of returns. Sorry, it took me 30 minutes to get to it, but I really did enjoy my stories. There's a lot of truth to it, and they usually come to a point. Think
always
differently and turn your financial turn your financial pyramid upside down and pull and be very specific on when you pull money out. The market's crushing it, fine. You need to survive on cash flow or that you're doing your 4% withdrawal each year in retirement. The market's crushing it. That's a great place to pull from. But you have a huge correction that year. The next year, this on the sequence of return thing is go pull from your mattress. Or if you're fascinated by what Don Gray's talked about on reverse mortgage, most wealth for a lot of people who have retired is sitting in their house. It's nowhere else really outside of 401k or IRA. It's sitting in their house. So if you could pull the lever on a tool that's backed as a contractual obligation with the government and the financial industry so that they're going to pay you a consistent cash flow for the rest of the time you're in that house for the rest of your life, and you still get to live in the home. So instead of paying a forward mortgage, you have a reverse mortgage. Wouldn't that be a smart tool to use to pull money from, especially when the market took a hit and you could use that to supplement? Yeah. So it's like, why forever were broker dealers poo-pooing this?
Absolutely.
And FINRA and a lot of the entities out there saying, hey, this is a bad strategy. Well, once they got educated by people like Don Gray's and others, like, oh my gosh, this makes a lot of sense. We're not going to say this is wrong anymore. But, you know, usually institutions and the government are a little bit late to the game. It takes contrarian thinkers to show a different way to maximize people's finances. So that's a powerful strategy. The Bankosaurus is another powerful place that you can use to pull cash from on down years. I'm a huge fan of the Bankosaurus, not as an end-all, just as a powerful supplement to working to everything else in synergy. It just makes everything way better. One plus one, right? can be by far more powerful as a strategy, financial strategy, investments and savings than just having all your money in ETFs hoping to make 9-10% before taxes come into play. So sequence returns. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep, it does.
Yeah, we don't know what's coming our way. So we got to be very careful by having all these other different assets lined up where we pull the money from in a systematic basis. And that's also where it's fun. I don't know what you would call me, but that's the part where I love working with my clients on this, is that we're just very strategic on an annual basis of how we're going to play the game. And none of us know what's going to happen tomorrow or a year out or 5 years. Something we didn't think of is going to happen. But the more flexibility you can create and the more certainty you can put into your financial design and strategies, the way, way better the potential is for those outcomes, right?
Yep.
So that's sequence returns. Any questions for that on sequence returns, Tammy?
No, but I would, something that popped into my mind as you were talking is people tend to pull money out of the stock market, not when they should, but when they have to. And by having a bankasaurus or bankasauri, as you do,
bankasauri, yeah,
then you won't, if you decide to pull the money out of the stock market, it won't be because you need to, it'll be because it is a strategic move.
Yes, there you go, strategic move. I like that. Good wording.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's very intentional. It's not because you're forced into a corner or you got to go get a job. Right. And a lot of people, when they retire, they don't want to go back and get a job. It's not why they retired.
Right.
And so it's the same thing. You can't have all your money in a bankasaurus. You can't have all your money in a stock market. You can't have all your money sitting under a mattress. On its own, that strategy will lose majority of the time. But when you get it's all coordinated. And when I work with my clients and we're looking at everything, and you put things to use and it's all in synergy, and you're just very strategic about how you access funds and assets in different ways, that's how you can maximize your financial potential. That's how you can have a maximum, the most enjoyment possible in retirement. So the financials industry is the scarcity mindset. You go into retirement and no one's scared. Oh man, I don't want to take out too much money. I don't want to take out too much money. But wouldn't it be nice to flip the script and say, you know what? Especially when you retire from 60 to 75, it's probably where you're going to be the most active. Why don't you pull out as much as possible and enjoy it? Go to Hawaii, go do these trips, do the final remodel on your house, spend that money, enjoy it, and do it in a way, though, so that, maximize your life and do it in a way that you have so much safety factor and redundancy in place that you're not going to outlive your money. And you don't have to chase outrageously risky investments. There's different ways to play the game. So anyway, that's it. Sequence returns. So I don't know what else to call it, but that's the way I've learned. That's the way I've been educated. And I think that's just a very powerful understanding for people, is of how to pull money and when. And of course, the rest is the details of how to play that game. But this is just to give everyone to think about different ideas. So
I like it.
Sound good? Yep. I don't know what next week's episode is going to be about, but it's going to be on this retirement theme, different ways, different things to look at. But my gosh, people listening that have everything tied up in qualified plans and you're 5 years out or just retired, and it's just all sitting there, please rethink that strategy. There's things that can be done to protect it in a way so that you can maximize your retirement or your soon to be retirement. And that's it. I'm putting out another fun blog out. Anyone has more questions, go to engineeroffinance.com. Those that are really brave and would like some help, you can always pick up the telephone, 775-624-8839. You'll either get my assistant, a great receptionist, be happy to schedule a 15-minute time to talk with me, see how I can help. And I think that's it, Tammy.
I love it.
All right. Always, Tammy, thank you so much for being my co-host.
Yeah.
Very appreciated. And do you want to wrap it up? Or you want me to wrap it up?
I at least have a wrap up if you're okay.
Right. Yeah, wrap it
so
up.
So I love how over the last two podcasts, the contrarian thinking has kind of been a theme. And if that makes you uncomfortable, just recognize, like what Ken was saying today, that not one pattern fits all. In fact, every single person has their own financial pattern. They should have their own financial pattern. And if you don't feel like you've found yours yet, Ken is such a great resource to help you discover what your financial pattern is.
Thank you, Tammy. It pays to be different. And when you see the ones that have been very successful, you see what people are doing out there, they're doing something differently. And it's just something to embrace. So I love doing this. So grateful for this episode. So grateful for you, Tammy. Thank you so much to everyone who listens to this podcast. And if you love it and you enjoy it, please share it with others that you look up to and care for, and I think we'll get a lot of value out of listening to The Engineer of Finance. I look forward to our next episode. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.